Welcome to another episode of Coming Out Stories. Every fortnight, we sit down with a member of the LGBTQ plus community and hear about those intimate conversations that they had when coming out to friends and family. I'm your host, Emma Goswell, and the podcast is produced by Sam Walker for What Goes On Media. You can find out more at comingoutstoriespodcast.com, and you'll also find details about our book of the same name. This episode, we're off to the Scottish Highlands to meet a bisexual man called Andrew. He's behind the rather brilliant website Pride of the Terraces, so there's plenty of chat about LGBTQ people in sport. Before that, though, let's meet him.
Looking back, yeah, there were probably signs that I think there's a home video that my mum and dad took at one Christmas morning when I was like really young, about 4 or 5, and it's probably one of the campus things you'll see. But thank God that like doesn't see the light of day anymore. No, I'm pretty sure that doesn't exist. But that never added up in my mind, I guess. I never really thought, oh, this is different, this is strange, you know, I'm not like the other people. And then I guess when I was sort of moving into teens and I started realizing I was attracted to guys, I'd never really accepted that. It's cliche for people to say that they're told being gay or being bi or whatever is a phase. I kind of went the other way. I kept telling myself that I was straight, which wasn't obviously the case. But I just sort of kept thinking myself, oh, this will pass. This will not be a thing. And then it wasn't.
So you were telling yourself that it was a phase rather than
very
your family.
Much so. Yeah. Because I just always saw my future as being that sort of classic nuclear family, you know, grow up, marry one, have kids, get a job, all that sort of stuff. I never really considered that there was any other possibility.
And also, bi erasure is a real thing. And I guess if you were still attracted to women, if you're trying to navigate your sexuality and work it all out, it's confusing for a young person. If you're still attracted to women, you're thinking, oh, well, I must be straight then. And the opportunity or the idea of being bisexual or pansexual isn't obvious, is it? It's not there. There aren't that many bisexual role models.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, I think even now to an extent there really isn't that much visibility, and hopefully that's starting to change bit by bit. And I guess I didn't grow up that long ago, you know, we're probably talking mid-noughties into the early 10s, but even then I couldn't tell you anybody that I could point to and say they're bi or they're pan. And I did have crushes on girls, so that's just what I thought, okay, this is going to be how it goes forward. Looking back, I absolutely had crushes on guys as well. I just never registered that that's what they were. Yeah, it's difficult, I think, and bi erasure is just this whole topic that, especially in the last sort of few months with Heartstopper coming out and you know, the whole Kit Connor scenario.
Oh, yes, so just remind people, who was the star of Heartstopper, who was basically forced to come out on social media, which is horrific.
Yeah, as bi, because people assumed he was gay, I think, being at Heartstopper, and then he got photographed holding hands with a woman. And yeah, I don't think people often realise that bi erasure is a thing, but we're seeing, even in the 21st century, it very much still is.
And it's that whole obsession with having to know what people's sexuality is slightly odd as well, isn't it? Can you not just accept that they were brilliant in that drama and get on with it? No, people have to know what their sexuality is if they're playing a gay role. People feel like they're entitled to know it, don't they? It's weird.
Yeah, and I can kind of see both sides in that, because I get the whole representation thing with, you know, we want LGBT people playing LGBT roles to be able to bring their own experience to and all of that. But at the same time, nobody should be forced to out themselves when they're not ready to do that and they're not comfortable doing that. I've talked to a couple of friends about that particular case, and what I kind of come back to is that the progress that we've made with younger people and so many more people being accepting and knowing who they are so much earlier has actually put more pressure on people to know who they are earlier. And that's a world apart from even when I was growing up 10, 15 years ago. But seeing so many, you know, 15, 16 year olds now just being able to live as they are without as many, I'm not going to say without any issue. I think that raises the expectation that other people of the same age also knows who they are, when that's not necessarily the case, as we've heard in your podcast.
Yeah, no, I never thought about it like that, to be honest. But yeah, So back to you, Andrew. When
we got quite big there, didn't we?
Yeah, we do. We went there. When did the penny drop then? And you thought, actually, I don't have to be completely straight. I don't have to be completely gay. I might be bisexual.
Yeah, well, as I say, hindsight is 20/20. I probably knew I was attracted to guys from 12, 13 years old, but I didn't really embrace that and accept that until I was, I think, 19, 20, something like that, which, again, you know, hearing other stories on the podcast is going to be relatively early for some people, but that for me was still, 8 years of kind of hiding that away. And it was only when I was at university and seeing other people sort of being their authentic selves that I kind of was like, oh, actually, this is okay. I mean, I did come across people, but I never knew that I'd come across people who were LGBT. It was one of those. Again, it never really registered in my mind that, oh, yeah, of course, there's them. And looking back, yeah, there are quite a few people that I was around or that I knew of or even extended family.
But they weren't out then, or they weren't obvious?
I think some were, some weren't. People that were sort of around my age and my classes at school, that sort of thing, weren't out as far as I know. But I now know, either from social media updates or just from talking to people, that they are LGBT. There's one, I know one of my cousins was openly gay at that point.
Great.
But we weren't, my family aren't particularly close with sort of the extended family. So I kind of always knew that was a thing, but never really clicked that, oh yeah, of course, they're lesbian. So I have this visibility, I have this representation.
So remind us where you were growing up.
I grew up in a small town called Fraserburgh, which, because I'm assuming the vast majority of people will never have heard of it, is about an hour north of Aberdeen in the northeast of Scotland.
So you're right up north,
Right up north, yeah.
We've already discussed how cold it is compared to Manchester even this morning. You've been up to -2 this morning. Oof. But what is it like to be gay in that part of Scotland? I know Scotland has very progressive laws. They had marriage equality before England. Mm-hmm. And I assume it's quite easy to be gay in Scotland. But is that the same across the country? Is that the same in rural areas where you were growing up?
It very much depends on the area, I found. I grew up there and I now work in the Highlands, based out of Inverness, which, if anything, is even more rural and even smaller populations.
Yeah.
But where I grew up, I don't remember it being as LGBT plus friendly as where I am now. And, you know, I look back at school and I'm talking 2010, 2011, and I remember people being bullied for being camp. Not being out as gay, but for being camp. And at the time, I probably never thought this is bullying. You know, it was just, oh, we're teasing him, or, you know, it's lighthearted fun. But looking back, yeah, no, that was definitely bullying. And I know people still struggle with that quite a lot in rural areas. I do think some of that in schools, especially, it is changing. You talked about marriage equality, but Scotland is also the first country, I think, in the world to have LGBT education as part of the curriculum, as a mandatory part of the curriculum. And I know within, I think, 2 or 3 years after I left school, my old high school had started up an LGBT club, which was just totally unthinkable for me when I was there. I imagine that would only have made people targets. And I certainly would never have thought about going along to something like that. But it's fantastic that those sorts of things happen now. I think kind of like everywhere, you probably have the bigger cities with the more diversity in every sense, not just sexuality and identity, where you're probably going to be okay. Outside of those, and there aren't that many of those in Scotland, it can be a bit more challenging, and you'll probably find some smaller towns or villages, everybody will be fine with it, because everybody knows everybody, you're just like one big family. In other places, yeah, they maybe haven't reached that level yet.
Yeah, well, I do remember watching Nicola Sturgeon address Glasgow Pride, and this was pre-pandemic, I'm going to guess it was about 2017, 2018, around then. And I do remember her clearly saying she wanted Scotland not just to be a good place for LGBT people, not to be the best place in the UK for LGBT people, but to be the best place in the world for LGBT people. And she was going to do everything that was in her power to make that happen. And she got people cheering. I mean, I've never seen love and support for a national leader like I saw for Nicola Sturgeon at Glasgow Pride. It was quite impressive. So it seems like you are in a good place, and hopefully things can only get better in Scotland for young LGBT people.
Things are definitely getting better. I talked about the groups at schools there, but we've also seen a load of different Pride events pop up around the country. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was just Glasgow and Edinburgh, and now we're finding in the last 5 years or so, you have an Aberdeen Pride, you have a Highland Pride, you have loads of different wee places round about. Like, I know there was Oban Pride, you know, those, even the little islands round about Scotland are having their own Pride events now.
I would love to go to Highland Pride or Oban Pride. That must be immense.
it's fantastic to see it. So much as I'm maybe not painting the best picture of when I was growing up, I do think things are changing very quickly, and things are hopefully only getting better.
Yeah. So you did witness bullying at your school, but I'm guessing it wasn't directed at you, was it?
No. We were talking just before recording, I said I hate this phrase, but I absolutely did pass. I was the guy who would sit and chat to other boys in my school about football all day long. You know, I was the quiet one in the corner who was a bit of a nerd, who for the most part people just left alone because I wasn't that interesting. Whereas other people who were maybe a bit more, I used the word camp earlier, flamboyant, maybe into their arts, doing drama instead of doing maths or whatever. I know a couple of them certainly would have had it much more difficult than I did.
So when did you feel empowered enough or aware of yourself enough to actually come out and say, yep, I'm a bisexual man?
I feel like it was quite a slow process because I don't remember just one moment where it was like, oh yeah, this is who I am now. I think it was sort of over months, and it was a gradual realization. And then I first came out to someone, I think it was March 2016, so by that point I was 20. And that, I mean, that was just so freeing in that moment, and I was on such a high for the next couple of days to just finally have said it.
Who was the first person you said it to then?
It was one of my friends. So I was at uni, and it was one of my friends from home that I messaged, I think. I did it over Facebook Messenger.
Well, that's one way of coming out. I think that's a first.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I've covered pretty much all of the... I've done it on the phone, Messenger, text, in person. Technology nowadays is great. And when my social circle was very much split over a couple of different places, that kind of became a necessity at one point. I think the way I did it was I had had a conversation with my friend earlier in the day, and I think I messaged her at night just being like, you know what I was saying earlier? Yeah, I wasn't totally straight with you. And she was just like, huh? What do you mean? I'm like, read that again. And then it clicked. And yeah, it was just like, yeah, okay, here we go.
That's quite a cryptic coming out, Andrew.
Yeah, I know. I got more sort of on the nose as we went through. We chatted about it for a long time after that. That was also, I think, like 1:30, 2:00 in the morning, because at uni I was nocturnal. So it was maybe a bit of that coming into play, sleep deprivation. But yeah, that's cryptic, is quite a good word for it, actually. I hadn't thought about that before. I thought that would be a really clever way of doing it, but you know, she got it. It was fine.
Well, I don't know about how you feel about terminologies. Do you feel bisexual or pansexual, or is there no difference to you, do you think?
I identify as bisexual. I think when I sort of embraced that term, I wasn't aware of pansexual even then, and even though it's not that long ago. There are times where I probably struggle to see a massive distinction between the two. I think there's definitely overlap, but it's down to what people are comfortable with, isn't it? You know, I'm not saying that to say they are one and the same, we should only use one by any means. It's just that's what suits me, and I never really considered pan as a label.
So did you explore your bisexuality at university then? Were you having relationships with men as well as women?
Not really. The whole reason that I ended up sort of coming to terms with it was because I'd fallen for a guy. But that was also towards the end of my time at uni. So I'd spent most of that spell still in the closet and still not really knowing exactly what was going on, trying to work my way through it. So by the time I really was comfortable with it and out to people, uni was kind of done. So I never really had the chance to live that queer student lifestyle that, you know, so many people go and do. And then after uni, I went back to my mum and dad's, where I wasn't out again. So I've kind of had this back and forth quite a lot. And then when I started work, I had this moment where I was like, nobody here really knows. So I've never really, until like these last couple of years, ironically during the pandemic, just been able to kind of go, yeah, this is who I am, this is what I want to do, and live that life to the fullest, as cheesy as that may sound.
Yeah, well, it takes a while. It takes confidence, it takes knowing yourself 100%, doesn't it? It's not something that you do the day after you decide you might be gay or bisexual. People generally sit on it for a little while, don't they, before they're comfortable saying it. So when did you get round to having the conversation with your parents?
It was about a year and a half after I first told my friend.
Right.
This probably gives you an insight into my mind. I'd drawn up a list of people that I was like, I need to tell them. And my family were on it, but I think they were the last ones that I actually told on that list. I guess I was kind of out to my friends at uni and relatively comfortable in that, but I was always scared of doing anything publicly in case it got back to my family before I personally had told them. So it was right at the end of 2017, and I probably have to give you a bit of context here, because 2017 was, in my mind, an absolutely awful year.
Okay.
So I'd lost my granddad at the very start of 2017. I then graduated uni and moved back to my mum and dad's, like I said, and was trying and failing miserably to apply for jobs coming out of uni. My social circle were either still down in the central belt of Scotland, where I'd gone to uni. People I'd known from school, 90% of them had moved away. So I felt very isolated in that sense. And not being out to my family, again, looking back on it, I can now say was contributing to that in quite a big way. So when I actually had the conversation with them, I'd kind of blown up a little bit at them. I was getting very frustrated. I was very unhappy with just my general life situation in that moment. So I had a bit of a tantrum. I know that's quite childish, but that's what happened. And I started sort of opening up to them about struggling at times at uni, and I was just kind of like, while I'm telling them stuff, I might as well add this into the mix.
Yeah.
It was very much just a spur of the moment thing. Oh, well, I'm here now, I might as well just add this other thing on.
And what was the reaction?
Exactly what I had expected. So there's my mum, my dad, and my brother. And my mum got quite emotional and said she thought it had been very brave, which I didn't expect her to have any sort of issue with it at all. I knew my brother would be totally fine. When he was at uni, he'd shared a flat with a couple of guys who were gay. So if that was going to be an issue, that would have come up at some point beforehand. Yeah. I was pretty confident that would be fine. My dad, I didn't think it would change anything, but I didn't think he would really understand it. And that's basically what he said in the moment. It's like, I still love you, but I don't really get this. And to be fair, he has been so supportive since. You know, there hasn't been any issue. I think it just took him a while to wrap his head around.
And do you think if he'd said you were gay, he would have understood that? Is it because you said you were bisexual that he was struggling because he didn't know anyone else bisexual or understand it?
I don't know. I've never really thought about that. I've never really had the conversation with him about that. Maybe that would have been simpler, yeah, to just kind of go, rather than this, it's this, as opposed to maybe saying it's both. Maybe that's it.
I think there is one issue and one root of biphobia is people, again, assuming that it's a choice and just thinking, oh, make your mind up. You need to be one or the other. You know, and I think that sort of hatred and misunderstanding comes from the gay community as well sometimes. I think I've met a lot of lesbians and gay men who are like, oh, wishy-washy bisexuals. They just need to, pick a team. Like, not understanding that it is a sexuality. And have you come across that as well?
Personally, not massively. I've seen a lot of that sort of stuff online for other people. I personally have never had anybody use phrases like pick a team, like you use there, or, you know, make your mind up or anything like that. I've been extremely lucky because nobody's ever had an issue with it.
You've had a fairly smooth coming out story then, really.
Once I got to the point where I was telling people, yeah. For sure. I mean, that was even to go 18 months. I think it was even a little bit more than that between first telling a friend and then telling my family. That felt like such a long time. But I know that people have it much worse. So yeah, relatively speaking, I couldn't really have asked for any more, to be honest.
Well, yes, the last person I just interviewed came out in his 60s, so went a long time in the closet, shall we say.
Yeah, I don't know how I could have coped with that. No. So fair play to them.
I think 18 months is a struggle. Over 40 years, definitely a struggle. Yeah.
Kind of puts it in perspective a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. So have you had any boyfriends since, or are you mainly focusing on female partners, or are you just happy being you on your own?
I have just been on my own. when I was talking before about sort of smaller communities, that often also means choices are a little bit thinner on the ground. So no, nothing has ever really happened for me like that. I'm not saying I wouldn't be open to something. Sure. I would love to be in a relationship and find someone, spend the rest of my life with them, but it's not really a main priority for me just now. I've kind of got to the point where I'm like, if it doesn't happen for me and where I am, the amount of people around, it might well not happen for me. That's okay.
That's a good attitude to have, I think. And you're still young, aren't you? You're still in your 20s.
Yeah, as we record, I'm 26. So plenty of time, in theory.
Plenty of time, exactly. And what about work then? Were you able to come out at work? You know, I know you did eventually get a job after all. I've been there. Don't worry, Andrew. I know what it's like being a graduate and applying for all the jobs and getting bugger all in response. But you got there in the end, didn't you? And you have a good career now as a journalist.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I always say to people now who are maybe just about to leave uni and think about applying for jobs is that it took me, I think, 8-9 months of applying for jobs before I got anything. But the one that I ended up getting was the best fit for me. And it was the one I would have enjoyed the most out of all of them. So timing is everything. But it's ironic in terms of people at work knowing. After I told my family, I then decided, after saying I wouldn't do anything like this, to write an article for my own student paper where I would come out publicly.
Ooh.
And that got published the same day I went for my job interview for the job I'm still in now.
Amazing. What newspaper was this?
It was a Stirling University student paper called Brig. I think the article's still there online. That was the year after I'd left uni, so I still knew people there. And when I talked about visibility and seeing other people living their true lives, there was another member of the paper while I was there who was openly queer, and he decided for LGBT History Month to try and get an article from an LGBT perspective every single day of the month. And I saw that and it was amazing, seeing all these different perspectives, people's different stories. And once I told my family, I was like, I kind of want to contribute to this. So he was doing it again. And one of the articles for that year was me coming out publicly. That was the same day as my job interview that I eventually got the job and I'm still there today. And after a couple of months, because those two things kind of overlapped, I just kind of assumed, right, I'm out now. Everybody knows, you know, it's public knowledge. If any of my new colleagues go on my social media, it's there. But then after a couple of months and nobody really mentioning it, I was like, I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody's clocked this yet.
People need to know this information, don't they?
Well, it's not like I was going in day one. It was like, hi, I'm Andrew, I'm bisexual. But it was just like, I feel like it would have come up at some point. If just like, you know, what are you doing at the weekend or whatever, that sort of thing. And it just kind of slowly dawned on me, I'm not sure anybody really knows that this happened and that I wrote the article and that I'm out now and that this is a thing. And to be fair, I never really sat down and had a conversation with anybody at work. I just started writing more about LGBT stuff. Mm-hmm. I think then people sort of started to put the pieces together.
And it's now kind of become your speciality, a bit like me. I've become a bit of an LGBT journalist, you know, that's kind of made a career out of it. And you've done the same, really, haven't you?
Yeah. So when I say I didn't sit down people at work, I just started writing about it. I launched a website called Pride of the Terraces in October 2019. I'd been thinking about it for a few months in the build up to it and sort of working on building a site before actually launching it properly. That specifically focuses on LGBT in sport. So my day job is as a sports reporter. It's very much my life, I guess. As I said earlier at school, I would sit and talk to people all day about football. But once I came out, I started discovering different things of, you know, there's a BBC podcast on LGBT in sport, and my mind was just completely blown that all these people are actually out there, because I hadn't seen any of this representation before, other than maybe two or three really high profile examples. And there was this whole world that I didn't know was there. And that was incredibly inspiring to me to want to go and do something similar. And I then realized I work as a sports reporter. I kind of have the means and resources to go and do something like this. And while there was that podcast, there wasn't a website and written articles focusing on that and dedicated to that. So I kind of saw a bit of a gap and thought, I'm going to do this. So once I launched that, that's when people at work then I think started realizing, oh, he's writing about this because he is part of that community. Okay, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm still here three and a half years later doing the website and doing Pride of the Terraces, and it's been amazing.
And what I love about the website is it helps smash a few stereotypes, I think, doesn't it? Because the stereotype is, oh, gay people are crap at sport. And, you know, and I've interviewed plenty of gay men who, you know, do fit that stereotype and who were rubbish at sport at school and they just wanted to focus on the drama or whatever. And, you know, they fit that stereotype. But it is a stereotype, isn't it? There are plenty of LGBTQ plus people who love their sport, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are people competing at the very highest level. I've spoken to Olympians, you know, people who have won Olympic medals.
Yeah, you know, not... and not just Tom Daley, there's others.
No, exactly. Yeah, there are absolutely people at the very pinnacle of sport who are also part of the LGBT community. And I should maybe say as well, that stereotype you're talking about, that's totally fine. You know, if you are bad at sport, fine. If you don't then want to take part in it, that's up to you. But that shouldn't be something that stops you taking part in sport. You know, there are still spaces there for LGBT people to go and have a kick about with mates if it's football, or, you know, join a team that is more social focused and there to bring people together and be part of a community and meet people as opposed to going and winning competitions and winning leagues and medals and everything.
Yeah, and what is nice is there are so many LGBT inclusive sports clubs and football clubs in particular across the country, and they're full of people who maybe didn't take to sport too well at school because they were bullied and they didn't live up to their full potential, and then they've gone back to football or sports that they love a little bit later in life, and it's been really empowering for them.
Yeah, I see that a lot with people coming to inclusive clubs, football and other sports as well, where growing up, they just couldn't marry the idea of their love of sport and their identity. And maybe that was an internal thing, like it was for me. Maybe that was other people who kind of made them feel unwelcome by language they used or comments that were made. And eventually they managed to come back and find a space where they can be both and there's no issue about it. That is, again, I used the word inspiring before, but it's so amazing to see all of these people now coming back into sport and being able to enjoy it and not have to worry about getting picked on or getting bullied or even getting attacked sometimes. It's kind of revolutionary in a way.
And it's interesting that we are having this conversation on the day that England will play their first game in the World Cup in Qatar, a competition that a lot of LGBTQ people, myself included, will be boycotting because of Qatar's record of human rights or lack thereof. But so maybe it's worth just having a quick conversation about why mainstream male football is so homophobic and so difficult for people to come out in. I mean, it's just a scary place for some reason, isn't it?
It's an interesting one because everything you hear from players, from managers, are that there wouldn't be a problem in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And we've seen in 2022, Jake Daniels came out, the first British player since Justin Fashanu. In Scotland, up here, we've had a couple of referees come out. We had Xander Murray become the first Scottish men's player ever to come out. So the evidence that we've seen doesn't actually really tally up with saying men's football is very homophobic, and yet the culture clearly is there that's not a welcoming place. Otherwise, we'd have more than one player in the English leagues. We'd have more than one player in the Scottish system. So I think that speaks more to a historical thing and more of a culture that's been embedded over decades, you know, since the very start of organised football. And I don't like to blame the fans, and that's not what I'm trying to do, but you do sometimes hear homophobic chants from the crowd. You do see the abuse that players get in stadiums, on social media. And I think that's probably the bigger factor right now than football not being ready for a gay footballer. Because I think we've seen in the UK and in other countries, like Josh Cavallo came out in Australia in 2021, that actually that's probably not going to be an issue within teams. So it's then down to what other factors there are.
Yeah. And I guess that's partly why I wanted to do your website as well, because it's about having pride on the terraces, isn't it? Yeah. It's about having LGBT people at events as well as being on the pitch and feeling included.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I started up the website, I probably give a different answer to everybody every time they ask me why it happened, because yeah. there were so many different things that came into play. One of them being in 2019, there were quite a few incidents, I'll say, some of them homophobic, some of them just affecting the LGBT community. Like, I don't know if you'll remember this, but there was the gay footballer on Twitter who claimed to be a second tier player in England who was going to come out.
That's right. Yes, I do remember this. Yeah.
And I think the day before that he was supposed to reveal his identity or something like that, the account shut down and couldn't do it and was never really heard from again. Mm-hmm. We still don't really know for sure if that was a hoax or if that was actually a player who just didn't feel ready and didn't feel able to do it. But there was stuff like that happening and stuff in other sports. Like, I think there's a couple of things in cricket where Joe Root, who was England captain at the time, had said during a match in the West Indies, don't use it as an insult, there's nothing wrong with being gay, in response to something a West Indies player had said.
Didn't he? Yeah.
And there was an Australian player as well who had put up a post on Instagram, I think, saying that it was him and his boyfriend, and then backtracked later on saying it was just a joke. A bit like we saw in 2022 with Iker Casillas. So there's a few things like that, and it was like, actually, this isn't a laughing matter. You know, there is a real need for visibility here, for role models here, and at all levels of sport, not just in, you know, the English national teams, and not just in the Premier League when it comes to football. And that's why I try, with Pride of the Terraces, to talk to people who have been Olympians and who are at the very top of their game, but also people who, like we talked about before, maybe were driven away from sport and have come back and joined an inclusive club, or just finding a way to do it at their local village team or whatever. Because all of those stories hopefully have some sort of impact and show that there is a place in sport for people. That's essentially what it all boils down to. That's what I wanted to achieve with it, just to show that it's possible. And if you don't think it is, here are all these other people doing it.
Brilliant. Well, and finally, because I always like to ask people advice for other people coming out. I mean, maybe you might want to direct this at any male professional footballers who might be listening, who are in the closet. Advice for coming out as bisexual, maybe.
Well, as I say, I've listened, I think, to every episode of Coming Out Stories, Emma. So I knew you were going to
ask this. Dedication. Well done, Andrew.
I got, once I came out, I was really fascinated by other people's coming out stories. So I'm a regular listener. But I've been thinking about this question, and I still haven't really been able to land on a simple answer for it.
Well, I'm glad I asked you it then, because you were expecting it. You know the format.
I think, because I also know before I had come out, I probably wouldn't have listened to much advice. I wouldn't have taken that on board. Yeah. So trying to think of something that's useful, but also, you know, has some actual meaning, that has been quite difficult for me. I think, even though it's maybe a bit cliche at this point, it would just be, it's probably going to be okay. It really is as simple as that. And, you know, if you are who you are, things will get better. And if other people don't accept that, that's their problem, not yours. And you're probably better off without them. You've probably heard that loads of different times, but that's really the simplest thing I can boil it down to.
And even good advice if you are a Premiership footballer, you know, it probably will be all right.
Yeah.
You know? I'd never encourage people to come out before they're ready, but it probably will be all right.
Yeah, there was a fantastic article, I think it was written a few years ago now, on Outsports, which is an American site on LGBT sport. And it was basically, when a male footballer at the top level does come out, what will their day look like? And it was just broken down. It's like, wake up at this time, have go into training, do this, whatever. And I would love to know if any of the people who have come out since that was written, how similar their day was to that. Because it was basically just a standard normal day.
You know, nothing's going to change. Yeah.
Go into training, you know, you maybe have an extra meeting or two, like this is going to be announced at this time, this is going to be made public. But it's basically a case of turning off your phone, don't look at the reaction, at least for a while and until you feel ready for it, and go about your life as normal. And I'd say every player in pretty much every sport I've talked to says it wouldn't be an issue in the dressing room. So I don't think there's any reason for people to be scared of that, and that's really what matters, isn't it?
So great to chat to Andrew. And I must recommend his website. Just go to prideoftheterraces.com. They're also at Pride of Terraces on Twitter. And you'll find loads of interesting articles on LGBTQ people in sport. And honestly, there's some really fascinating people on there to inspire you. Next episode, we're off to America to meet EJ, who identifies as being a genderqueer, genderfluid, mask lesbian. But they also told me that their identity is something they're still figuring out.
I've had quite the internal war with myself over the last couple of weeks about what my pronouns are and like who I identify as. And I've recently kind of come to the terms with abolishing the labels that society tries to put you in. So I kind of prefer the term genderqueer over non-binary, just because I feel like non-binary is more of a label than genderqueer, considering I haven't really figured that side of myself out quite yet.